Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
From Southern California, ladies and gentlemen, where it's temperate. It's the way it's described. If you ask the meteorologists, you hang out with meteorologists, don't you? It's temperate. Ladies and gentlemen, following up, the new F-bomb foreclosure. Lest you think that that is over, that that story has ended, it, au contraire, mon frère, it just keeps going along, just keeps rolling, like the Energizer fraud. Ocwen Financial, the largest non-bank mortgage servicer in the United States, has been prevented from buying about $40 billion worth of mortgage servicing rights from Wells Fargo. Now, servicing is when a bank has given you a mortgage, then sold off the mortgage to investors. And the investors, they're not in the business of collecting your payments and making sure that you pay. So that business is turned over to another company called a mortgage servicer. They were, in many cases, subsidiaries of the very banks. Cute. But now the banks are getting out of that business because the feds are requiring them to have a higher ratio of capital on hand for the mortgages that they service. So they're selling off to these other companies, these independent companies, servicers, of which the largest is Ocwen. Now it's being prevented by a New York regulator from buying mortgage servicing rights from Wells Fargo. It follows concerns, according to the Financial Times, over the company's ability to handle more loans. The decision by New York's Department of Financial Services followed a consent order 2 years ago that imposed a monitor over Ocwen after a regulatory examination identified gaps in servicing records it believed indicated noncompliance. This is just 2 weeks after the planned $2.5 billion sale was announced. At the time, Wells Fargo said the loans represented about 2% of its residential portfolio. The bank this week declined to comment. Ocwen says it will work closely with the New York regulator to resolve its concerns. As a mortgage servicer, Ocwen is responsible for collecting payments from homeowners that are then forwarded to holders of the loans. This follows a state and federal settlement announced 2 months ago by the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and authorities in 49 states. We only have 50. The CFPB sued Ocwen, accusing it of years of, quote, significant and systemic misconduct that occurred at every stage of the mortgage servicing process, unquote. So they're complete. CFPB said this month's misconduct included unfair shortcuts, unauthorized fees, deception, and other illegal practices. As I say, the new F-bomb continues to explode. Now, also following up, ladies and gentlemen, last week we had a discussion on this program with John Barry, late of the New Orleans East Bank Levy Authority, about the lawsuit that authority has filed against more than 90 oil companies and petroleum companies and oil servicing firms seeking damages for the destruction they have wrought on the coastal wetlands of Louisiana, southern Louisiana, with more than 10,000 miles of pipelines and canals they dug into the wetlands, allowing salt water to intrude. And during that conversation, we mentioned that Garrett Graves, the head of the state's Coastal Protection and Restoration Authority, was the point man in Governor Bobby Jindal's opposition to the lawsuit. This week we learned Garrett Graves has resigned. To spend more time with who, you think? That's right, his family. I'm going to put up a prize of $5,000, ladies and gentlemen, for the political public relations firm or consultant who could dream up an alternative fake explanation for resignation that will replace "I want to spend more time with my family." $5,000 reward will not be paid. Hello, welcome to the show.
You don't need no fancy tricks, painted eyes or glossy lips. I love you just the way you are. Hope you don't mind my beat up car. You don't need to change your dress. You don't need to change your shoes. And don't try to hide your natural looks. Forget about the cover, let me read the book. Don't get me wrong, I like them heels, but the way I feel is the way I feel. You don't need to change your dress, you don't need to change your shoes. Go ahead, be wild and free, and you don't have to shave your legs for me. Honey, babe, don't starve yourself. You're looking good, you're looking well. And I'm proud to have you by my side, glad to have you in my life. You don't have to clean my house, you don't have to wash my clothes. Go ahead, be wild and free, 'cause you don't have to shave your legs for me. You're an angel. Don't have to read them magazines, already know how to get to me. Just be yourself and I will too, that's all we really have to do. You don't have to be ashamed, you don't have to hide your needs. Go ahead, you don't have to shave your legs for me. Now go ahead, be wild and free. You don't have to shave your legs for me. No, you don't have to shave your legs.
From Southern California, ladies and gentlemen, last place where the Olympics made a profit, maybe ever. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. And speaking of which, news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersol Jr. Well, you know about the water. It's too dangerous to touch, let alone drink, in Sochi. And all the stories about the strange hotel rooms. And you probably either saw or heard about the opening ceremony of the Winter Olympics in Sochi, which ended with a spectacular fireworks display and the traditional lighting of the cauldron. You probably also heard the ceremony hit a bump when only four of the five Olympic rings materialized in the opening scene. The five were supposed to join together and erupt in fireworks, but one snowflake failed to explode. But that's just what you saw. Things worked fine for Russian President Putin, who was seen photographed enjoying all five rings in a picture taken in his presidential suite. Like magic. It turned out Putin had been watching the Russian national feed, Rossiya, which cut to footage of the five rings working perfectly from the full rehearsal of the ceremony. Most of us around the world, however, watched the Olympic Broadcast Services feed that showed live the failed fifth ring. Producers confirmed the switch, saying it was important to preserve the imagery of the Olympic symbols. Konstantin Ernst, executive creative director of the opening ceremony, told reporters at a news conference that he called down to Master Control to tell him to go to the practice footage when he realized what was happening. Quote, "The rings were the most simple technological thing. We know all the world shows the opening ceremony. And I can tell you that taking into account the technical difficulty of the so-called high mechanics, we are the first who did it. All the rest except the rings went well." And aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play? With the Sochi Games starting, the IOC faced up Thursday to the next challenge this week, overcoming the delays for the 2016 Summer Olympics in Rio. The IOC again warned Brazilian organizers they have no time to lose in getting everything ready for the first Olympics in South America. "Significant and tangible progress has been made," said Nawal El Mutawakil, head of the IOC's coordination panel. Quote, "It is clear, however, that constant supervision and assistance will be required over the coming months," unquote. IOC President Thomas Bach traveled to Brazil last month to urge the government and organizers to speed up. He held talks with President Rousseff and other officials. Quote, "We have made it clear, very clear, there is not a single day to lose," said Bach this week. "We need progress every day to make these games the success we all want it to be," unquote. He offered this message to the Brazilians at the end of Thursday's presentation. "Congratulations and back to work. There is no time to lose," unquote. Rio's preparations have been dogged by delays in construction, particularly in the park that contains a cluster of sports venues. The roof of Rio's main Olympic stadium is under repair, and organizers said this week the work would be completed by the end of this year. There are also concerns, as we've noted, over water pollution in Rio and the lack of a defined budget for all the projects. But it's the Olympics, and it's a movement. We all need one. Every day. And we don't need a budget. By the way, if you've been listening to this broadcast for a while, like 10 years, you may remember, and this is the 10th year anniversary of the wardrobe malfunction at the Super Bowl. You may remember I told you eyewitness account of that event, watching the world feed, that is to say the one that everybody else in the world sees, of Janet Jackson's appearance on the Super Bowl halftime show. And the director of the world feed cut away at the very last minute, avoiding the close-up shot of her breast, almost as if he knew what was going to happen next. Isn't that wild? It's a wild world. What the frack? A new report finds, this is interesting, ladies and gentlemen, to me, because I've been asking this question kind of dumbly for some time on this broadcast. What about all the water that's used in fracking? Aren't we having droughts? Isn't there a prediction that water is going to be in short supply in many parts of the world where food is grown in coming years? Well, now here comes this report from a nonprofit called Ceres, finding that hydraulic fracturing is posing a growing risk to water supplies in several regions around the United States. Instead of groundwater contamination, so often makes the headlines, it's from the massive consumption of fresh water for fracking in water-parched areas like Texas, Colorado, and California. Fracking requires millions of gallons of water to frack a single well. And in places that are suffering epic droughts, fracking is increasingly competing for access to water with other uses, like agriculture, and drinking water for cities. By the way, millions of gallons of water to frack a single well, and reports indicate increasingly that wells don't last very long. Their production level spikes very quickly, and then it spikes downward very quickly. And so, given this new attention to the natural gas boom, there's big pressure on oil companies to find a lot more wells and drill a lot more wells and use a lot more water. This report, Hydraulic Fracturing and Water Stress, comes from Ceres, a network of investors, companies, and public interest groups. It finds that about three-quarters of all the 39,000 wells hydraulically fractured between January 2011 and May 2013 have occurred in water-scarce areas, more than half an area suffering from drought. The report provides a series of recommendations which include recycling of water used during fracking, using wastewater or brackish water for the fracking process, disclosing more information, and tougher regulations. Yeah, right. The competition between water uses for fracking and other uses is not new, particularly in dry areas, but with oil and gas production in Texas expected to double over the next 5 years, the issue will only grow in importance. News of AFPAC. The number of civilians killed or injured in Afghanistan, what do you think? Decreased last year because the war is going so well? No. It climbed last year, according to the UN. Oh, the UN. Even as foreign troops headed home by the thousands. And British Prime Minister David Cameron declared mission accomplished in Afghanistan. There's a tip-off. There was a sharp rise in casualties from battles between Afghan government and Taliban forces. And it was the deadliest year for women and children in nearly half a decade. Armed conflict took an unrelenting toll on Afghan civilians in 2013, said the top UN envoy. More ground engagements led to more civilians being killed and injured in their homes and communities from crossfire. The 7% rise in the number of civilians killed to nearly 3,000 was just below the record level of deaths in 2011. The overall toll from more than a decade of fighting is now more than 14,000. Insurgents responsible for three-quarters of the casualties, and the UN called on them in particular to rein in the effect of worsening violence. We know that they'll be as attentive to the UN as we'll be. News of AFPAC, ladies and gentlemen. And now,
if you want me to love you, all that you must do is just say so.
Well, here are two people who really want us to love them. First, from New Zealand, a Kiwi who likes to answer questions, to begin his answers with the word so.
Exactly how much higher than normal are these tides expected to be?
So these tides are going to be the highest that we're going to experience this year, and we won't see tides in the order of 3.7 metres until late February next year.
So why are they higher and why are they sticking around for longer?
So basically tides are influenced by how close the moon is to the Earth.
What sort of thing are you after?
Absolutely. So Auckland Council is supporting the Auckland King Tide Initiative.
Well, but if you think absolutely so is the latest and greatest in mitigated so beginnings of sentences, I present to you a young lady being interviewed on our sister station WNYC-FM in New York, who gives us both the yeah-so and the no-so.
Why insist on going there when there are a number of really fine but less expensive options, like state universities?
Yeah, so I grew up in a small college town in Alabama.
Was there a possibility of getting a scholarship to ease the economic burden?
So I did not receive any scholarships.
Were you thinking Wall Street from the start?
No, so I arrived at Duke, and I had never even heard of Goldman Sachs.
So it wasn't so much that you thought banking would be a lot of fun, a fascinating career. It was more that you could make a lot of money at it and pay off your debt.
So that was definitely a big part of it. So I actually entered this Wall Street chase during my sophomore year.
She even founded the Financial Education Partnership. What does that?
Yeah, so Emma is an economics professor at Duke and also a former Goldman Sachs banker.
You say recruiting is a game that's played and acknowledged by both sides. How's the game played?
Yeah, so there's certain rules, these unwritten rules that you need to learn.
There are also nonprofit and government career fairs at colleges. Are they well attended?
Yeah, so I think that colleges are beginning to make more of an effort to offer these alternatives to Wall Street.
How is their partnership mutually beneficial?
Yeah, so Teach for America does a lot of good work.
Were you interested in those fields? And right now you work as a consultant, don't you?
Right. So I went to the Career Center as a sophomore.
Did you encounter cheating?
Yeah. So there were instances during my time at Duke of hearing about students who lied on their resume.
There are certain approaches that the companies use when they're doing these interviews, like the stress interview and the airport test approach.
Yeah, so interviews you can prepare for only to a certain extent.
How did that affect the hiring process at the big banks?
Yeah, so there were far fewer internships that were available.
You tell a disturbing story of an interviewer trying to take advantage of you. What happened?
Yeah, so I was asked to meet with a consultant at this firm that I had an interview with, and he was going to help me prepare for the interview, and that's exactly what we did.
And you turned it down?
Yeah, so it actually wasn't J.P. Morgan. It was another financial firm.
You now want to be a writer?
Yeah, so writing is my true passion.
And does this come down to a personal reaction to the way the business world works?
So I think my story is a very common story.
I think it's getting more common every day, ladies and gentlemen. The So's of the Week. Copyrighted. Did I repeat that? Did I say it loud enough? You'll see the significance of that question later on in this broadcast. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast, and now, news of our friend the Atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Safe, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, safe, too safe to meet. Safe, safe, too safe to meet.
Not enough really to wake up Addy, the Atom, this week. Just one item. Just one little item. TEPCO, the company that ran Fuk, into the ground. It says a groundwater sample taken from a well at the Fuk No. 1 nuclear plant last July contained a record high 5 million becquerels per liter of a little thing called strontium-90. We like to call it strontium-90 over here at the show. TEPCO initially said it had detected only 900,000 becquerels per liter of the beta ray emitting radioactive substance in the sample taken last July, right after the 4th, but then found problems in the measuring equipment in October. Strontium-90 usually accounts for about half of all beta particle-emitting substances in contaminated water, don't you know? At the power station, the total amount of beta particle-emitting materials in the samples are likely to be around 10 million becquerels, far higher than the previous high of 3.1 for that well, according to a TEPCO official. TEPCO stopped releasing strontium-90 data after finding problems in the readings for July and August. It recently found mistakes in its calculation method and obtained new readings through rechecks. According to TEPCO officials, readings of beta particle-emitting substances such as strontium-90 in water tend to come out lower than actual amounts when concentrations are high. To deal with the problem, TEPCO changed its measurement method in October, but it didn't announce the change at that time. It didn't want to bother you. You weren't thinking about Christmas. Strontium tends to accumulate in bones and may cause bone cancer and leukemia. The utility also said it will reanalyze past water samples because some of the figures, unlike TEPCO itself, can't be trusted. Clean, cheap, safe, too trustworthy to meet her. A friend, the Atom.
It's a funny old game, this thing we call love. No one explains, it has two faces. I wish you the best. I wish you the worst. Pity and shame, forgiveness and blame, a kiss and then a curse. The bitterest of words, the gentlest of touch, or they live side by side, and sometimes that is almost enough. We're happy today, tomorrow who knows. I'll threaten to leave, and you'll beg me to go. We twist and we turn, we struggle with fate. Or the more that we love, darling, the deeper that we can. It's a funny old game, this thing we call love. No one explains, it has two faces, like the sun and the rain. Love.
From Southern California, this is Le Show, and now
he's not a general,
he commands no troops,
he's not an inspector,
he peeks at no stoops,
he's an
Inspector General.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, ladies and gentlemen, news of the Inspectors General. The Pentagon continues to mismanage acquisition programs. Really? Who would have thought? Who would have thunk it? As a result, it wastes billions of taxpayer dollars. That's according to the Defense Department's Inspector General. He's reporting to Congress. They really care. The report issued this week says during the time from April 1st through September 30th of last year, the office issued 83 reports identifying $23.5 billion in potential monetary benefits. That's their way of saying money down the toilet. Down the toy-toy, down the federal toy-toy. Acquisition and contract management is one of seven core functions that the IG audits. At the Pentagon, the others are financial management, joint war fighting and readiness, cybersecurity, healthcare, equipping and training Afghan security forces, and nukes. In the report, the Inspector General called acquisition and contract management, quote, persistent challenges for the Defense Department. That's a nice way of putting it, isn't it? They can never do it right. No, it's a persistent challenge, is all. Quote, for acquisition programs, the department needs to better balance its limited resources, the capabilities needed for current conflicts, and the capabilities needed to prepare for possible future conflicts. Senior leadership has in recent years terminated acquisition programs that were underperforming, over budget, or of questionable continuing investment. Well, that's a good thing, I guess. The IG credits Pentagon leaders for having strengthened contracting policies to prevent abuses, but nonetheless, the report said the department, quote, continues to struggle to consistently provide effective oversight of its contracting efforts, unquote. Chronic contracting deficiencies include inadequate competition, poor definition of contract requirements, ineffective oversight of performance, and inadequate maintenance of contract documentation for payments. Little thing called documentation for payments. During the 6 months covered by the report last year, the IG's office conducted several audits involving questionable acquisition programs, several of which involved the procurement of spare parts, pricing of spare parts. One area that was found lacking is how the Defense Department awards performance-based payments to contractors. These are payments they're supposed to get for doing a good job. Of 60 contracts the IG's office reviewed, about $13 billion worth. Auditors found the government was making payments in the absence of measurable performance by the contractors. It's faith-based payment, don't you know? And the U.S. military also lacks methods, valid methods, that is, for gauging the effectiveness of Afghan troops and police, according to the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, the SIGAR. He suggests there's a problem with the metrics used to assess the Afghan security forces will worsen as the U.S. withdraws all of its combat forces this year, and fewer troops are available to monitor the Afghans. The audit said the U.S. military would have to rely on the Afghan forces to rate themselves. Why don't we all do that, ladies and gentlemen? Why don't we all just rate ourselves? Why don't we just all go rate ourselves? The U.S. commanders have given the Afghan forces high marks for improvement, but the Inspector General's statement accompanying the audit said the Defense Department, quote, lacks a plan for collecting, validating, analyzing, and reporting on Afghan forces' assessments during the drawdown of American and NATO troops. The statement said that ISAF, the allies, you know, the coalition, the willing, may not be able to obtain an accurate understanding of the Afghan unit's capability, and the Defense Department therefore may not be able to make fully informed decisions based on Afghan unit's capability. The audit said analyzing the military's methods for assessing the Afghan forces is complicated by repeated changes in the ratings definitions used by the Joint Command over there. Why not keep changing the definitions? Keeps everybody on their toes or off them. News of the Inspectors General. Ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Well, two stories made the news this week involving allegations of sexual misbehavior. One, we're not going to be tackling on this broadcast, but the other came from journalistically perhaps not the most reliable sources, a website called Radar, in conjunction with a supermarket tabloid. They claim to have a tape recording of actor Tom Sizemore saying that Bill Clinton had implored him in profane terms to give him, Bill Clinton, the phone number of Elizabeth Hurley, once Clinton had determined that Sizemore had, in fact, once dated Elizabeth Hurley. And after such imploring, Sizemore, in fact, gave him the number, and in the tape recording, he claims that Clinton then had an assignation, shall we call it, with the actress in a room right next to where Hillary was at the time. In subsequent days, Sizemore totally repudiated the recording, said he did it, it was him, he said the stuff, but he was high on crystal meth. He's well known for having had substance abuse problems periodically throughout his term in the limelight. Elizabeth Hurley responded by texting the word yawn. There were no comments from the Clintons. You may remember last Sunday, as recently as last Sunday, Rand Paul, I believe, on one of the Sunday shows, when asked about Hillary Clinton's chances as a putative presidential candidate in 2016, gave clear indication that that at least he and probably more Republicans are prepared to bring up Bill Clinton's, I believe the word we were taught to use back then was peccadilloes, if she is to run. So, you know, partly because of the sources, partly because just of the nature of the story, major yick factor. But there's one place you can go, it seems to me, ladies and gentlemen, to up the yick factor just a little bit.
Today on Dr. Bill.
He said, I don't have time for this shit. I'm the commander in chief.
An explosive tape. An explosive charge.
He said, I'm going to say I asked about your uncle, the baseball player. That's the lie.
And an explosive denial.
Dr. Bill, I did not have sexual relations with that woman either.
All today on a very special Dr. Bill.
5, 4, 3, 2. Wipe your forehead, Dr. Bill. Lick your lips, Dr. Bill.
Dr. Bill! Dr. Bill!
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah. Hello. As we say at the start of every show, I'm not a medical doctor, and my real name's not Bill. Wow, what a blockbuster show we have for you today. A taped accusation that a man cheated on his wife with a famous Hollywood actress while the wife was right next door. That's right. Well, we talked to the actor who made that accusation. We'll call him Tom. And while he refused to let us tape that conversation, here's what I think he was saying. Dr. Bill, I am an alcoholic, and alcoholics say the craziest things, which, by the way, is the name of our spinoff series beginning on the TLC cable network later this spring. Thank you. But what kind of man could be the object of such an accusation? Let's meet him right now, former President Bill Clinton. Come on out here. Yeah. Here, sit down.
There you go. Hey, Dr. Bill, big fan. Love your work with catfish victims.
Well, no, that's a tactic we might call preemptive flattery, isn't it? You're trying to get me on your good side by admiring some of my more successful television achievements.
Hey, if it works, don't break it.
All right. Now, Bill, yeah. This is an accusation that you cheated on your wife while she was in the next room. Now, that sounds to me like it was calculated to hurt her. Can you understand how a person could see it that way?
Hey, listen, Dr. Bill. Mm-hmm. There was only one thing in that tape that was true.
Okay, now we're going to start talking about truth. This is where I get good. What was that one thing, Bill?
Tom's uncle really was a major league second baseman.
So you're sitting here on this very expensive set today, mm-hmm, and telling us, mm-hmm, that you didn't ask Tom for Elizabeth's phone number?
Man, I didn't need to do that. I had the Secret Service. I didn't need some second-rate actor to run down the street and get me burgers either.
Well, now, you just said something very interesting, Bill. You said you didn't need him.
You listen well.
I try to. I've retired my license, but I still try to listen. But if I were in this very powerful position.
Oh, hey, your ratings aren't that bad.
I mean, like the position you used to have. Mm-hmm. Maybe I wouldn't want to send that request for that actress's phone number through the people who work for me. Maybe I'd want to use for that purpose an actor who's known to have substance problems.
Well, hey, maybe I wouldn't want to be married to you. And maybe you don't trust the people who work for you like I trust the folks who worked for me.
You know, now, Bill, mm-hmm, I'm listening to you attacking me, and I appreciate that in your old line of work, attacking is the best defense, but we're not in a CNN debate here, are we?
No, sir. I didn't even get an opening statement.
All right. Maybe what we have to do is open things up here a little. Mm-hmm. We could not get the actress named Elizabeth to agree to appear via satellite with us here today. She did tweet the word yawn. But there is somebody we did want to have on with you today who did agree. I think you may know her just a little bit. Hillary, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine, Dr. Bill.
All right. Do you want to say hello to your husband here?
Hey, Toots.
Hi, Bill.
Hillary, let's just say for the sake of argument that Tom's apology is sincere, that this was the crystal meth talking, and that this incident never happened.
Oh, Bill never used crystal meth.
No, that's Tom's crystal meth.
Tom who? I just came on the Polycom.
That's Tom the actor?
Mm. Oh, now you're briefing my guests. So, we're assuming all that.
Mm-hmm.
Does this sound like the behavior of your husband while in high office asking a relative stranger for the phone number of his former girlfriend to cheat on you, not just behind your back, but right next door to you?
Well, you'd have to ask him.
I have, and he's given me what I'd have to describe as a $2 tap dance.
That sounds like the behavior of my husband.
Now, I just have to say, nothing I've done in the last dozen years has been a $2 anything. And she knows it, more like a $2 million tap dance.
Well.
And I never heard her complain about that.
Well now Hillary,
mm-hmm.
That sounds like he's accusing you of taking advantage of his earning power.
Well, in all honesty, that may have been true in the years before my earning power exceeded his.
Well, now, Bill, I guess what I have to ask you is that given what Hillary just said, if you thought that I had Elizabeth's phone number, would you be trying to get it off of me right about now?
Hey, listen, if you had the phone number of an actress who looks now like Elizabeth looked back then, that might be an interesting question.
I think she looks pretty good now.
I'm beginning to lose control here.
Oh, is that an issue for you?
I think the issue for me is that I think the two of you need to work on your marriage a little bit more.
I think you have to tell him that.
I just did.
Hey, look, I came here as a favor to Hillary so she could try to shake the taint of being married to me before it gets too close to the next election. I think working on our marriage might just get in the way of that.
You know, folks, I think I'm beginning to understand why Tom used the crystal meth. Tomorrow, the twin sons who think their father is cheating on their mother with twins. See you then.
And speaking of copyrighted features, it became public knowledge this week, thanks to a piece in the Deal Book section of the New York Times, edited by Andrew Ross Sorkin, with whom I shared the stage one time on Bill Maher's show. I'm sure he remembers. A piece by Andrew Ross Sorkin, kind of a think piece, kind of cogitating about the significance, the oddity, the cultural meaning of the fact that there seemed to be a lot of apologies by public officials and public figures and heads of companies and so forth in recent years. And he's going to do something about it, ladies and gentlemen. He announced in that piece that he was starting something called Apology Watch in the Deal Book blog of the New York Times. I'm very honored and very flattered. Andy, I know you don't remember that we shared a table at Bill Maher's show, but I think I can call you Andy now. You've got your hand deeply into my back pocket. I think just a few tips along the way. First of all, a catchy theme song. Maybe something by a former Beatle. I know it's a blog, but you can have audio.
We're so sorry.
And then you might want to start off with just something really nutty that's connected to another one of your copyrighted features, if you have one, such as the Olympic movement.
Between February 6th and 23rd, CBC Radio 1 news podcasts will be unavailable due to Olympic rights restrictions. We apologize to our listeners for this temporary inconvenience. News podcasts will return Monday, February 24th.
That's right. If you're a Canadian and you're trying to get your news from the podcast of your public broadcaster, good luck. There is no news during the Olympics. But they're sorry. A top executive of retail giant Target apologized to lawmakers and consumers this week for a massive cybersecurity breach that put customers' financial information at risk at the height of the holiday shopping season last year. Quote, I want to say how deeply sorry we are for the impact this incident has had on our guests. Your constituents, John Mulligan, Target's chief financial officer, said during a hearing of the Senate Judiciary Committee. He continued, we'll work with you, the business community, and other thought leaders to find effective solutions to this ongoing and pervasive challenge. Yeah, legislators in the business community. Thought leaders. Think of it. Target was joined by high-end retailer Neiman Marcus in humbling itself before the senators. Both suffered high-profile security breaches that have shed light on the problem which the committee hopes to find a legislative fix for. A computer science professor at Memorial University in St. John's, Newfoundland, who is the center of a controversial assignment creating a program predicting whether a rape victim would kill herself, has apologized to his students. You won't hear this on the CBC. Some students were upset with the assignment from John Shi, who had asked them to develop a software program that would predict whether a rape victim would commit suicide after being humiliated through online commentary. The dean of the science faculty at the university said he'd met with the instructor to discuss the situation. The dean said she, the instructor, has apologized to the class, and he's also submitted a new question on the assignment so that students will not lose marks if they didn't complete the original question. She has not responded to interview requests from the CBC, but you wouldn't hear them anyway because it's the Olympics. But he told McLean's magazine that he apologized and he had not considered the sensitivity of the topic. He said he was trying to give the students a familiar topic for assignments. Just, you know, rape is so familiar to students in Newfoundland. One day after Time Warner Cable customers spent more than an hour of the Super Bowl staring at a blank screen in Southern California, the company apologized and announced it would offer all subscribers a gift card or credit whether or not they were affected by the outage. Time Warner Cable announced around 4:45, just as the teams were taking the field, it was having problems with its feed from several Southern California channels. The feed returned an hour and 15 minutes later. Thousands of customers reached out, furious with the outage. Deadline Salt Lake City, a Utah lawmaker is apologizing for a tweet he sent Monday. It is now participating in sensitivity training. There's that word again. The tweet was meant to be a joke, according to Representative Jake Endreg. Instead, the tweet flared tempers and caused outrage on social media from around the country as being insensitive to the lesbian, gay, and bisexual and transgender community, the LGBT. And Andreg has been apologizing ever since. It was off the cuff. It was bad judgment. It was totally inappropriate. He said that I've apologized. The tweet said he'd stated he'd considered changing his identity so he could use the ladies' restroom because the private men's restroom was occupied. He said the tweet was sent by an intern. He also called for sensitivity training at the Capitol Monday night. That's right. Not enough sensitivity in Utah. That's the problem. You've noticed that, haven't you? Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick publicly apologized this week for the health care coverage challenges created during the transition for Massachusetts residents to new policies under the Affordable Care Act. His administration rolled out a plan to repair the faulty website that has frustrated enrollment efforts. A new team put in place by Patrick, including a top executive from Blue Cross Blue Shield, has been tasked with helping the embattled technology vendor CGI fix its dysfunctional website. To the people whose transition has not been smooth, he said, Governor, that is, I join my colleagues from the Connecticut and MassHealth in apologizing to you for the inconvenience, and I want to thank you for your patience. That's what they always say when you have no choice in the matter. Patience is what you exercise when you have a choice. Sitting there on the plane that's stuck at the tarmac because they can't find the jetway, you're not exercising patience. You're just scared of saying anything because they'll shoot you. I also want to assure you, said the governor, that we're not going to let anyone slip through the cracks. How are they going to get through the cracks? Charlie Sheen has finally apologized to his replacement on Two and a Half Men, Ashton Kutcher, after 3 years of harassment. Ashton Kutcher blasted Sheen on the Jimmy Kimmel Live show for his constant abuse on Twitter. Dude, shut the F up. Enough already. It's 3 years later and you're still blowing me up on Twitter? Come on, dude. Really? That was Chuck Lorre, the creator of Two and a Half Men. Next day, Charlie Sheen took to Twitter, telling Ashton Kutcher he was sorry and promising to keep his mouth shut from now on. Message received, so sorry, you sounded like me. Well done, my bad, I was pissed at other crap and took it out on you. Hope you are good. XOX, Charlie. No, I think the original tweet was not from Chuck Lorre. I think it was from Ashton Kutcher. Like we care. Stephen King apologized on Wednesday for a badly worded tweet in which the author suggested that Dylan Farrow's open letter about sexual abuse had a sense of, quote, palpable bitchery to it. The tweet earned King a load of angry replies, after which he attempted to walk back the tweet and explain that it didn't come out right. After spending a day trying to figure out how to respond to the backlash, he took to Facebook, where he's explained that he had more than 140 characters to explain what he meant. He said he didn't allude to the idea that either Dylan Farrow or her mother, Mia Farrow, was a bitch. Rather, he explained, I used the wrong word to describe not Miss Farrow, either Miss Farrow, but a sad and painful mess. A Spanish politician apologized for using the term Jewish market in describing European budget negotiations. José Antonio Monago, the president of the local government of the Spanish autonomous region of Extremadura, said his statement was inappropriate but had been taken out of context. I did not mean to cause any offense with this expression, he said in an apology, adding he's publicly apologizing to the Jewish community. He had said, quote, discussions about the budget must not turn into a Jewish market, unquote. See, now you've got the context. A Vegas bar is taking a great deal of heat after putting up an insensitive joke in its marquee targeted at the Denver Broncos, but including sick children at St. Jude Children's Hospital. The sign at the Blind Tiger Bar and Grill said, quote, Broncos couldn't beat the kids at St. Jude's. It's since been taken down, and the staff has apologized. But that's not enough for a man whose daughter has cancer and who complained. He said that what was on that sign was just soulless. Insensitivity at a Vegas bar, ladies and gentlemen, imagine. A Duke Energy official in North Carolina apologized this week for a major spill of coal ash from one of its retired power plants into the Dan River and promised the utility would clean up the damage. We apologize and will use all available resources to take care of the river, says Paul Newton, Duke's North Carolina president. We will do the right thing for the river and surrounding communities. We are accountable. But I wonder if they're transparent. CNN has withdrawn the story, The World's Ugliest Monuments, because it was not of the standard we would expect of a CNN report. That's CNN talking. The story caused unnecessary upset in Russia and Belarus with its description of the Courage Monument in Brest, Belarus. CNN apologizes for the unintended offense caused by that article from a contributor, which was intended to be a humorous look at monumental architecture worldwide. Humor by amateurs, ladies and gentlemen. Deadline Concord, California. Officials at a Bay Area private school are apologizing after a lunch menu option to celebrate Black History Month angered some parents and students. You know what was on the menu. Fried chicken, cornbread, and watermelon. I say that town should change its name to Discord. See, it was called Concord, and Bank of America apologized this week for sending a credit card offer addressed to the consumer as, quote, Lisa is a slut McIntyre. The consumer's name is Lisa McIntyre, but the middle part was somehow inserted into her file in the database that Bank of America used to send out the offer. Interesting piece of junk mail addressed to you, her mom said in a text message, because the invitation from Bank of America came to her parents' house. Bank of America said, we're incredibly sorry this happened and researching now so we can take the appropriate action. Golden Key, an academic honor society that apparently sold McIntyre's information to Bank of America, also apologized. They're also researching how Lisa is a slut got into the address. Israeli lawmaker David Rotem apologized for comments attributed to him that members of the Reform movement are not Jewish, saying his words were, quote, misinterpreted. I have never said belonging to the Reform movement makes anyone less Jewish, he said in a Facebook post. While as an Orthodox Jew, I have theological differences with the Reform movement's perspective, I maintain the greatest respect for all Jews, regardless of their denomination and background. I apologize for any misunderstanding and all offense generated by the content of my comments yesterday. What he had said at a meeting of a committee of the parliament was, quote, the Reform movement is not Jewish, they are another religion. And Barbara Walters has apologized to Elizabeth Vargas for claiming their ABC News colleagues knew she was an alcoholic before Vargas admitted it publicly herself. The awkward exchange occurred on The View when Vargas and her co-host Jenny McCarthy, Jenny, thanks for all the measles, McCarthy interviewed Vargas. McCarthy had asked Elizabeth what made her finally seek help for alcoholism. Vargas replied, "I showed up for a shoot on 2020 and I was in no condition to shoot that interview." Walters interrupted, "We at ABC News all knew it was public at that point." Vargas replied, "This was not true." To which Walters awkwardly quipped, "No, but we all knew you were an alcoholic." Walters has since apologized. "I love Elizabeth and I have great admiration for her. I never would have deliberately said anything to hurt her, and I called to tell her that," unquote. Walters should be sensitive to that kind of thing, since a guest, she took to The View to express her hurt when a colleague at ABC News once gave a speech kiddingly referring to Walters as having had 82 facelifts.
"If I had had 82 facelifts, I'd have to go back for more. It would be as addictive as tobacco or crack. My skin would have been pulled halfway down my back. I'd be subsidizing an obvious quack. So I won't have 82 facelifts. I'm happy with 54. I'm happy with 54.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America, via the shortwave giant WBCQ The Planet, on the Mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcsn.org. Available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com and available as a free podcast from WWNO.org, Sideshow Network, SoundCloud.com, and iTunes. And it'd be just like if Dr. Bill was a real medical doctor, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you already? Thank you very much. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii, Chicago and Exile and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. Thanks to Jenny Lawson at WWNO New Orleans. Playlist of the music heard here on, email address for this broadcast, and a fabulous store where you can get Cars I Talk t-shirts again. Yes, again for the first time, all at harryshearer.com. And I'll be yakking at you in 140, my own 140 characters, on Twitter at The Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, Louisiana, flagship station of the Change is Easy Radio Network. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody.